Welcome to Divorce Talk, a podcast for people who are contemplating divorce, going through one, or would like to know everything about the divorce process. Each episode, you'll hear from Chicago divorce lawyers from Bierman LLP, one of the largest divorce and family law firms in the state of Illinois, speak on all things divorce, from child custody, divorce litigation, mediation, the collaborative process, and everything in between. Now, here are your hosts, the Bierman Divorce Lawyers.
Hello, I'm Sandra Napoli DiArco. I'm here today with Jared Pincus and Joe Napoli. We are speaking about alcohol addiction and the effects on litigants in the divorce process. So without further ado, I'd like to introduce Jared and Joe, have them share a little bit about themselves, and then we'll get started on the subject matter. Jared?
Yeah, hi, my name's Jared Pincus. I've been a partner at Bierman for about, I guess, the past 13 years, practicing primarily in areas of family law, dealing with issues related to child custody and divorce.
Joe Napoli, went to John Marshall Law School here in Chicago. I've been with the Bierman firm for about 8 years. Very happy to be here and very excited to talk about the topic today as it's come up in some of my cases recently.
Okay, thanks. So without further ado, how do the courts view alcohol issues as they relate to parenting time?
Well, I'll start taking that. Obviously, the court's first and foremost concern is making sure that the children are protected. So whether it's alcohol or some other form of substance abuse, the court wants to make sure that there's no immediate harm or danger for the children. Really, over the last 13 years, a lot of technology has helped courts monitor that better with programs called SoberLink, where they can do immediate alcohol testing and know that a parent is sober when they have their child, or other forms of drug testing. And so they're wanting to make sure that the child is safe and that the parent isn't abusing substances when they're with the child. But they also want to look at the underlying issues as well, so that this type of monitoring doesn't go on and on and on. So whether it's treatment, inpatient, outpatient, or some form of other therapy that's necessary, courts will often look at that. But one thing that they always are working towards is making sure that the child has a positive, healthy relationship with both of their parents, regardless of the substance abuse issue. So while it's helping the parent deal with the substance abuse issue, a lot of the time it's also making sure that that parent isn't just being pushed aside and left to fend for himself without parenting time with the child.
Joe, if a person going through a divorce is found to have abused alcohol, what are the immediate impacts on that individual?
Well, the court, in my experience, is always going to exercise caution first. And if it's found that someone has some alcohol issues, I think the court is going to take some action, okay? And that could be a scale of things. And I think the most harsh action is, you know, could be supervised parenting time or stripping that parent of parenting time in its entirety until people have a better understanding, the court has a better understanding of how bad the issue is the child safe, and what are we going to do next to find out more? So I think in that scenario, I think caution is going to be exercised first and foremost. And I think it's important to know, and I'm getting a little bit off topic, but I think it's relevant, is that for litigants, whether they can control it or not control it, it's going to be a momentum shift, okay? If there's an alcohol issue in a case, my experience has shown that it's going to set the momentum and it could shift things, right? So if you are the litigant that, you know, was found to have abused alcohol or made it an issue, you know, it can be running uphill in a sense.
How do we define alcohol as an issue? Does the court have a way of saying, yes, you're an alcoholic, or you've had two drinks and it makes you drunk and it causes you to be unruly? What is the definition and who determines?
So that's actually a very common issue. A lot of the times when we're sitting down to meet with a client to begin with is they've got concerns that their spouse or one of the parents is abusing alcohol or abusing drugs, but there's no material evidence of that. There's no proof of it. There's, you know, he comes home and has a couple too many beers at the end of a night. And so that's something usually there'll be a child's representative or a guardian ad litem will be appointed. And they're going to look to see, is there behaviors impacting the child that can be pointed or tied directly back to alcohol? And sometimes that's when those monitoring kind of protocols that we were talking about come into effect. So if drugs are an issue, there could be random drug testing to make sure that everybody's clean. There could be an initial test, and they also do hair follicle testing that can look back 60, 90 days and check to see if there's been real substance abuse and, you know, who's being forthright and who's not in this. And then they'll try to begin to deal with that issue. Alcohol is tougher because it's legal. With marijuana becoming legal, that's probably going to create a whole new Pandora's box on how you can tell if there's abuse of it or if it's just regular social, you know, enjoyment of something that's illegal that's not creating a problem. And what that'll tie to is how is it impacting their parenting? So were they driving under the influence or their DUIs? Are they abusive? Do the children, if they're children of a certain age, can they report back that dad was drinking too much or dad fell asleep on the couch for the whole night? Or are they observing other signs that would cause concerns about substance abuse that impact their parenting time with the children?
Joe, does it make a difference if an abuse of alcohol happened during parenting time versus not during parenting time?
I think it makes a big difference. If the issue with alcohol, well, number one, and I'm certainly not advocating for this, but if the issue of alcohol happens not during your parenting time, maybe that doesn't come to light and that might not be known to the court. What the court looks at is they want to know the issues as they relate to the children. Certainly, yes, if you have problems unrelated to the child, they keep reoccurring, that might be brought up, that might be an issue that might have affect your parenting time. However, as Jared pointed out, if you are doing things, and he mentioned some more on the greater scale, driving under the influence, if you have your child with you during those occurrences, or you passed out during your parenting time because you had one too many, that is going to be a big, big problem as opposed to if you did not have your child. So yes, I think there is a big difference in that scenario. And certainly if you do these things when you are exercising your parenting time, it's going to be an issue.
And I'll just add to that too. Another point that we see a lot is because there's a spectrum of where you fall on the substance abuse side of things. So in situations where there's either denial of there being an issue or we're flushing out early on as to whether or not there's a problem with alcohol or you've just had one or somebody's just had one or too many on a couple of different occasions. If you don't have your kids and you're under this microscope, which you are when you're in custody litigation, period, and you're abusing alcohol on your non-parenting nights, that's really going to call into question your ability to control the problem, even though it doesn't directly tie to your children. So when courts are talking about, well, how much parenting time are you going to have going forward? It's going to be considered the fact that, you know, maybe the alcohol abuse issue is more than just social enjoyment or a couple of mistakes, but it's a real problem that is or is not being addressed. As opposed to somebody who doesn't really have a problem, but has on occasion gone out and had one too many, that's kind of up to the judge's discretion as well as the child's rep and the guardians kind of see how they're going to respond to that.
Have there been situations where children have been taken away from one of the parents because of alcohol abuse?
The short answer is yes. It's unfortunately not uncommon. As we discussed earlier, I think the court is inclined to exercise caution first. And depending on how severe the allegation is, depending on the parent went to the hospital because of this, the court is going to exercise caution. And yes, that's going to be one of the more severe penalties. But absolutely, a court can and does and will take a child away from a parent until they feel comfortable and certain that that parent is okay to exercise time.
And that's the key to the whole taken away concept is they're going to take them away for a while, but they're never going to take them out of that parent's life. So there's always this process of trying to help build that relationship. Even once the child is taken away, that's a temporary removal while you're hopefully working towards building a healthier relationship between that parent and child.
So the court does do checkups on folks so that it minimizes the amount of time that they are not with their children. Is that correct?
Well, the court does. I mean, the court will have the lawyers coming back or the child's rep coming back to report on the progress of somebody in a substance abuse, you know, situation. Sometimes it's 90 days out, 6 months out to keep progress. Sometimes they'll keep a much shorter leash on it depending upon the specific circumstances. But yeah, the court is always monitoring it and really trying to make sure that the child has a healthy relationship with both parents. I mean, that's what the court wants. And it knows that it's up to the parent who has the substance abuse issue to get the help that he or she needs to get healthy so that they can have a safe and healthy relationship with their child. The court really is rooting for that to be successful and will give every opportunity, but they will not, and to Joe's point on erring on the side of caution, in our experience, the court will always err on that side. The judges want to make sure that nothing's happening to a child that's in their jurisdiction.
I'm curious, where do the children go? Is it to DCFS? Is it to the other parent?
Go to the other parent.
Okay.
Right, so, I mean, assuming there's no issues with the other parent, if that parent has presumptively unrestricted parent's time, in other words, they don't have someone watching over them while they're exercising time, then absolutely. Those responsibilities that the parent that has the allegations of alcohol abuse against, they will just go to the other parent. So the other parent will have, you know, close to majority or all of the parenting time until things can get sorted out as to what the issues are with the parent accused of the alcohol issue.
And then there are always the rare circumstances where grandparents or somebody, other interested party, who where both parents are completely unfit or for one reason or other unavailable to exercise custody or parenting time.
Let's take this scenario. Let's say someone does have an alcohol abuse problem. They get help for it. They're on the mends. And maybe 2 years down the line, they have a relapse. What happens?
Okay. The good news is that if you have a relapse, the good news is as Jared pointed out, that there's going to be encouragement to get help. There's going to be a second chance. Okay. Now it sounds like what we're talking about now is the second or third opportunity.
Right. Do I lose my children forever?
I relapsed.
On the second time around?
I came back. I did better. And some time went by and I relapsed again.
Right.
I'm going to tell you in my experience that, and certainly don't encourage it, that you're always going to get opportunities. Now there's going to be less patience with you when you get these opportunities. The light's going to be a bit brighter on you, but you will get these opportunities. And I think the more that you relapse, or if you have these second or third relapses, it's going to take longer to get back there. Okay. It's not impossible. It's not ever going to not happen, if that makes any sense, but the road to recovery is going to get longer.
And the other thing to that too is I completely agree. It's so important to be forthright and honest with the court about relapses, about what's happened, about the extent of it, because your credibility, especially when you are, you know, abusing substances, is paramount and it's verifiable. So if you go into court and say, hey, I haven't used drugs, I'm not using drugs, I've resolved this, and they order a drug test and it comes back positive, now every time you say anything going forward, you've lost your credibility. You're going to be suspect. And so you may end up going back under that microscope because you've relapsed. It's always better to do that, having been honest and forthright about what's happened, be it to the child's rep, definitely to your attorney, and obviously to the court, and deal with the problem head on rather than denying it and just pushing it along until it does finally catch up with you. And that's a deeper hole to dig out of.
So in your opinion, what would be the best way to prove to the court that I truly am on my way to recovery?
My experience has done what we've done is, as Jared pointed out, we got to front the issue. If you have a litigant that passed out on the couch, they have a 2-year-old child, they've been knocked out for 4 or 5 hours, the police came, they had to go to the hospital, they had to get treatment, and to come into court and say, yeah, it was just a one-off, no big deal, we're fine now. I think that's a problem. If you have an issue like that, you need to get help, whether that's AA, whether that's seeing counseling, whether that's getting a sponsor. And then even if you want to prove to the court, there might be, which Jared touched on earlier, some alcohol monitoring. And maybe fronting those issues to the court, recognizing, hey, I've got a problem. I'm not going to stand up here and tell you this was a one-off or this, yes, it should not have happened, but I'm fine now. No, I'm going to prove it to you. I'm not going to tell you. I'm going to show you. And we have devices in place that the court has utilized, you know, not to give any endorsement to anybody out there, but there's the bracelet people wear called the SCRAM bracelet, which is a 24-hour monitoring device. It goes on the ankle. It's rather discreet. And there's also a blowing device, which is commonly used in domestic relations proceedings, called the SoberLink device.
Well, this is very interesting and a very relevant topic in your world. Is there anything else you'd like to add before we close this chapter of our book today?
I guess the one thing I'd like to add is that the court is always looking, like we said in the beginning, about protecting the child, but it also understands how important it is to have two healthy parents. And I think a lot of the times addiction problems create this anxiety that somehow if they can't own up to it, they can't get the treatment they need, they can't get the therapy they need, because that's going to harm their relationship with their child. Some form of admission of guilt in the court system. And I think the opposite is true. I think if you have an issue and you're doing everything that is necessary to address that issue, be it going to outpatient treatment or inpatient treatment or whatever it is you need, that you do get the credit that you deserve, that the court will protect your parental rights. And when you come out healthy and you're staying on your plan, you'll get back to the relationship you were hoping for with your child. And the court works hard to do that. So we always encourage our clients in those situations to make sure they're getting the help that they need so that they can healthily parent their child.
It's unfortunate, but these are not uncommon scenarios. So be upfront with your lawyers, be upfront with yourself. And if there is an issue and you're in litigation, let's get a game plan in place to get you on the road to recovery.
Joe, Jared, thanks so much. If you'd like to learn more about Jared or Joe, visit our website at www.biermanlaw.com. Subscribe to the Bierman Podcast on your favorite podcast channel. And we look forward to seeing you at the next podcast series. Thank you.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of Divorce Talk. Visit our website at www.biermanlaw.com, where you can subscribe to the show so you'll never have to miss a single one. Please also follow us on Facebook and LinkedIn and subscribe to our YouTube channel. If you found value in this show, we'd appreciate a rating. Be sure to tune in next time for another enlightening episode.